This is the Talking Split Podcast.
Coaches, welcome back to the Talking Split Podcast. I am Rob Calder, the Coach Development Coordinator at Basketball Victoria. With me, I have the High Performance Coach for the Vic Country Men, Nathan Cooper-Brown. Welcome, Coops.
Good to see you, Rob.
And the High Performance Coach for the Vic Metro Men, Darren Best. Welcome, Bestie.
Good morning, everyone.
Excellent to have you both in. I appreciate, as always, the listener interaction. Just a reminder that whilst Twitter is still somewhat a thing at the moment, I think, you can get us with the hashtag Talking Split there if you want, or you can just shoot us an email, which is just as easy. As a reminder, we do have a mailbag episode coming up, so this will be done over the next 2 weeks. So if you do have any questions, you are more than welcome to shoot them in, and we will discuss those across the couple of weeks that we have in there. Obviously, the under-15 Oceanias have started yesterday. We're recording this on a Tuesday. This will come out on a Friday, so the tournament will potentially be done by the time that everyone hears this thing. But we are clearly hoping for two wins with our Australian groups. Both have started very well, it'll be fair to say, yesterday, but it is good to see two of our podcast favourites in Ash Arnott and Zoe Carr coaching at that tournament as well. So best of luck to them. We are talking senior coaching again. So we discussed this a couple of weeks ago. Coops, you were in on that one as well with Zoe, and we spent our entire time ranting about player agents and budgets and those types of things, and it turns out we didn't really do a lot in the coaching space, which we will get into a little bit today. But what was really surprising, I suppose, is that we did get a lot of listener feedback saying, look, this is stuff we'd never considered because we've only coached juniors. It's nice to actually hear about coaching senior athletes in this space and that sort of stuff. So we did think we had to delve back into this one and give it a little bit more credit in this space. So it'll be a little bit of the on-court and the off-court and how this will run. Obviously, Bestie, you're coaching in the youth league competition this year, so it'll be good to hear your experiences going through it. And Coops, you've coached all the way through those senior programs, so you know this one back to front as well. One email I did get in from a coach I do go back and forth with a little bit. His question was, why do we even have senior programs? Which, you know, we are in the development space, I suppose, as Basketball Victoria and an organisation, but why do we have senior programs, Coops? Especially when there is such a drain financially, I suppose, to put these on the floor.
Pathway.
Yep.
Yeah, pathway. So
careful, Coops. If you mention that three times, I will walk out of this podcast.
We drain on the candy man. You meant yeah, exactly. To say it three times. And no, it is about the pathway. It's providing our young athletes the appropriate steps to go on and try and achieve their basketball dreams. You know, we're talking about attaching, you know, senior programs to representative associations. You know, this is not participation. When you do put a representative association together, you are saying, okay, we're trying to elevate here. We're trying to provide a more elite platform, and saying to young basketballers, come here, we're going to develop you and give you a shot to go on and do some cool things in the sport, you know, and hopefully one day make some money from it. So, you know, those senior teams, especially with the clubs that really invest in it and understand what they're about, will create an environment both on and off the court that's going to mimic an NBL club or mimic maybe a smaller European club as best they can to say, hey, look, this is what it looks like. This is what it feels like. Let's get you ready and hopefully on to the next level.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is... We can't discount the community feel about it. Like you do want something that everyone buys into, and it's like you always want a team, I suppose, that's top of the tree, for lack of a better term. That really can't be your under-18s team or your under-20s team. Like there has to be something that sits that is the kind of the pinnacle of your association and your club that you want people to be involved in. And it can be something that just keeps kids in the sport. Like when they get to that age of sort of 15, 16, where they're kind of making decisions about, do I want to stick with this or not? Like is there anything more? I mean, how many of our kids have actually reached, when I say kids, our junior athletes, how many of our kids have actually reached that point where they're fully developed in under-18s? Probably none.
Yeah, not many. Yeah. Not many at all. And you know, that's something that we have to be conscious of. But let's not discount the fact too that, especially in, you know, regional parts of Australia, the senior basketball program is something that people really rally around and want to go and watch and want to be involved in. You know, they have fans. You know, when we're in Ballarat, you know, there was 1,000 people coming to watch the game. Mount Gambier is a great one. You know, you're talking about a pretty, you know, remote town, and they love their basketball and they love that senior program. They love seeing it have success. They want to be there and watch. They want to be there and connect with the athletes, and you know, they, a lot of those people don't get to go to the NBL that much. So I think that's something to remember too.
Yep. I mean, Bestie, you were involved down at Casey when they first jumped into NBL 1. Like, what was the atmosphere like at that first night where you guys had your first home opener?
Yeah, there was well over 1,000 people there.
Yep.
Yeah, I think as this question was asked, I started to unravel a rant inside my head. And I'm still going to do it, so strap in.
I love it.
The question was, why do we have senior programs if they're such a drain, or because they are such a drain financially?
Yep.
Right? I would be, as a member of any association, absolutely filthy on my association if they were investing into a senior program and not into the juniors.
Yep.
Because all it translates into is buying players from other associations. Now, that is always going to happen.
Yep.
Like, that will always happen. However, if you are, and a lot of these clubs, as you know, are spending 100 grand on a team, but they don't have someone working in a full-time development role for the kids, I'd be filthy. I'd be going to the AGM and saying, what are we doing? That's what I would be doing, because ultimately it's not sustainable. All you're going to be doing is just spending money to buy a team in. Now, the clubs that do both have at it.
Yep.
You know, go for it. You're working on your juniors. There's someone in that space. You're investing in them. Hopefully some of those kids translate through. But some clubs don't have that, and they just continually funnel money into their senior programs. Now, that is also a difficult one, because some of that money is brought in through sponsorship and all of that, that those people only want to directly invest in a senior program for maybe some of those reasons Coop's talked about. They want to go and watch it on a Friday night and all of that. So it's a difficult balance. And for myself, my first experience of this was actually up in Queensland when I was transitioning from still playing what is now NBL 1 North into a DOC role. And when I was playing, it was honestly, it's like, yeah, give me my money. You know, like, you know, I'm playing this, you know, and I'm being honest. And then when you get into the other side of it, you're like, oh, wow, there's no one here to help the kids. There's no money for that. And it's just all going into a senior team. You know, so it serves huge purposes. Like, I saw the regional stuff in Queensland as well. You know, Rocky, Mackay, Bundy, Gladstone, all of those just packed.
A little bit disappointed you didn't go with Gladdy on that one.
Oh, like, sorry. Could have kept going. And even down in Launceston, Northwest Thunder as well, just packed. There was players that would come down from WNBL to play for the Launceston Tornadoes to say that they had more fans in Seabull / NBL 1 than what they were getting in the WNBL, because the WNBL was in a capital city. So that stuff I 100% get. But most of those associations were heavily investing in the juniors. Where I would like to get it to is more, I guess, reward for your own players. And this is what they used to have in the QBL. If you played juniors there, you were worth one point and all those types of stuff. I would think we should hopefully get back to that, which we'll see that happen by a little bit more.
Yeah, we did. We used to have it in Seabull. I can't remember if it happened in the first year of NBL 1 or not, but I feel like there was something around if you had played a certain amount, even if you weren't their junior, so to speak, but if you had played, say, 200 games for that association, you were considered a homegrown player, so to speak. But yeah, it's interesting though, because I played it at Launceston and that thing is jumping.
Oh yeah.
Like it was wall to wall people, like queues. It, like, the fire alarm always went off for some reason. I don't know how that continued to happen, but it was one of those areas where everyone was in town. Like Mount Gambier is another one. Like you never wanted to get Mount Gambier on a Friday night out there, because it's a tough trip. But there is genuine support. And to what you're saying, Bestie, like, you make a valid point. No problems investing in your senior program. Like, absolutely none. But don't forget the juniors to invest in the senior program. And I think, I mean, you made mention, I think last time, Coops, that the best programs were the ones where you invest in your senior program, but they're investing in their juniors.
That's part
of that.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, when the whole thing connects, I mean, that's when you're really kicking goals, right? When it's aligned and everybody understands the pathway and the money's being distributed the right way and everybody has kind of this piece of it, in both connection from a fan standpoint or a volunteer standpoint, a playing coaching, that's when it starts to thrive and you see real success. And hence why, you know, especially coming off the back of Seabull and those, you know, old QBL teams, the ones that had the homegrown talent, you know, that fleshed out those middle, you know, kind of the fifth to the eighth player, were homegrown guys that were really good, but they'd come up through their own pathway. They loved being in their hometown and playing. They tended to win championships, you know what I mean? And so knowing that, and then just on the other part, just because I don't want to let Bestie rant without me kind of doubling down.
This is on shooting Coops. We did this last weekend.
But Also, on the other side of that is, you know, I've been around some clubs where, especially from the domestic side, who were funneling a lot of money to support senior programs, having, you know, regular meetings saying, why do we have a senior program? You know, kind of on the back of the question from this listener, you know, why do we have it? Let's get rid of it. Let's get rid of it. And my argument straight away was, you know, if you went down to your domestic club, you know, and whatever level it would be, and you asked those kids kind of where they wanted to go, you know, what was their pathway, who do they want to play for? Yeah, all the hands would go up for the senior program of the club that they're attached to.
Mm.
You know, they see the connection there. They see the path. They want to play there. You don't have that, they're going out the door at some point. So you're only just going to hurt yourself in terms of your participation and also, you know, your ability to have a strong representative and senior program.
And it's tough between the two because players are now starting to look at senior basketball earlier and earlier, I'm finding.
Yeah, definitely.
Like I've heard of some kids like that have moved from under-12s into under-14s. Like, yeah, I'm not really too sure if I'm going to go here because they don't have a senior program or they're not an NBL one or yeah. they're not a Div 1 team. It's like, hold on, this is not your problem for like 6 years. Like, don't worry about it now. Like, where's the best fit for you now if you're looking to change clubs? Because it is such a big part of that end goal for a lot of players. They want to be that person that eventually graduates into that pathway.
Mm.
God, even if I'm saying it. Like, it's no good. But it is. Like, I mean, it's a valid question. Like, I do understand why people ask it. And in particular, the domestic competition does fund a lot of the senior programs, but I think there's a real duty in particular to players and coaches that are involved in the senior pathway that you understand where the money is coming from to fund that, and you do tip back in. Like you've got to go and help out, you've got to go to some training sessions, and I know there are times where the players will sit there and go, this is the last thing I want to be doing at the moment, is going to an 8:30 a.m. training session or an 8 p.m. training session in the middle of nowhere in this freezing cold gym. But those kids are there supporting you. And if you want their support and you have a really good time with them, they are going to turn up. Like they are going to come and support. They are going to be feeling invested in the program. So, yeah, I get it from both ends. But we do need to have senior pathways for some of these athletes to move into.
Oh, 100% we need to. And my whole thing is just the investment from the association needs to be relevant.
Yep.
So if you've got someone working in development for your juniors, cool. Spend another 40K.
Yep.
You know, but don't be loading up on, you know, $100,000 on one team senior roster, like maybe the men's team, for example, and then like the juniors are all playing in VJL3 or something like that. You know, like that's concerning.
Yeah, well, and that's where you probably revisit the league you play in at a senior level too.
True.
That's when it's like, look, yes. You know, we are okay now because we're potentially purchasing talent, for lack of a better term, into our association. But this is not going to be the way in 6 years' time. Are we better off dropping back now and having it at a level where some of these juniors can come in and play straight away? Or are we trying to just keep up with the Joneses, so to speak, and stay at that level? That's not really relevant for where they're at. So, tough one.
Story time, Rob.
Hey, here we go.
Yeah, recently had a friend and colleague take on a GM spot and... you know, obviously that has all its own challenges, but we had a really good long conversation about their senior program and, you know, had a look in terms of the geography of, you know, where they were and the competition. And one of the first questions I said to him was, you know, are you building to NBL1? You know, are you trying to grow this thing out and get to NBL1 and challenge and, you know, make it the kind of the biggest program that you can make it? And he went back and had a really good think about it. He's like, nah, look, our infrastructure is not going to work that way. And I was like, okay, great. Well, how about think about being a feeder program then? How about looking at some of those bigger clubs around you? You know, you've got a senior pathway. You've got a way now to grow your athletes, connect with the clubs around you and say, okay, if this player outgrows us, which we want them to, we want to be so good that we develop athletes that are too good for our program and we can send them on down the road. And then we celebrate that. We celebrate the fact that that is one of our players, that we did our job in terms of nurturing their talent and their character. And then, you know, you have that relationship with those teams where, you know, maybe some guys start aging out a little bit of NBL1, but still are good enough to maybe come back to, you know, one of those lower leagues and you can kind of chop and change and help each other out. And that's kind of where they said, and I just thought that was a really smart way of going about things. And I think there's more room for that to happen with our community to support, you know, the whole infrastructure of senior basketball.
Yeah, and there's a bit of ego involved with that, obviously, because you don't want to lose your player, and you sort of feel like, yeah, but if we can just keep them, you know, they will help our senior team immensely. And the flow-on effect is, look, if we lose that athlete to another association, maybe one of our 16s will look at it and go, geez, if they're leaving, maybe I should leave now. So you do have to sort of weigh up the two, but it's just what's best for the program, I feel like, in that space. And
has to be.
Yeah, I don't have any problems with people leaving in senior basketball for a better opportunity. I don't think anyone does, though. Like, I don't think anyone's going to sit there and say, no, you can't go and play at a high level because we really need you in this league for our association. Most associations are pretty understanding of that, I feel like.
Yeah, it's a little bit disappointing because I don't think we're as close to that as we should be. Yeah, at one of the clubs I was associated with throughout my days, we had a girl who was playing for our under 14 first team who were in VC, so really good, yet her domestic club were keeping her in under 14 C grade so that they would win the under 14 C domestic championship. And unfortunately, I think there's still too much of that.
Did they win though?
I couldn't even tell you. No, that was really the point where I just gave up on domestic basketball. So,
yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it? Like, it's trying to find the best for the athlete in that space, and hopefully that aligns with the club in that space too. So we could probably do another 20-odd minutes on how that all sort of fleshes out as well. But it's an interesting space. Is that I understand why people ask that question, but it is actually a really important part of the basketball scape, I suppose, is that senior place, because we want that connection. For a lot of people, it is a social connection too. Like, it is, if they stop playing, are they completely disconnected from the game? We don't want people being walked out the door at 18 because there's nothing for them to go on to. Like, not everyone's going to go and play in a pro league or college or anything like that, or travel the world playing basketball. But if we can still keep them in the sport, that's a great way to have them still connected with the junior association. They can potentially coach a team as well as playing and those types of things. So I think it is a valuable space.
I'm so glad you're the host and moderator, because I was just about to start sounding off on what Coops was talking about. So let's stay on topic.
The voice of reason. Very rarely have I ever been accused of that. But
good job, Robbie.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that. One of the things we do see a lot of recycled coaches, I suppose, in senior basketball, where coaches at their fourth stop in 4 years because it just hasn't worked out for whatever reason, wherever they are. How does a younger coach, I suppose, get involved in senior basketball? That's trying to come into the pathway.
Yeah, well, let's touch on why most often that happens. Is the root problem that I addressed is most coaches are attached to players. And when they go to an interview, whoever's on the selection panel, I'm going off again. Yeah. A lot of associations, when they have their interviews, don't actually have a basketball person in the interview panel. Maybe it's, you know, the board or whatever it might be, and some of them need to realistically understand that they maybe don't know about the senior space. They'd like to think they do, you know, and I think it's super important that if you don't have someone like that in your association, maybe a past coach or whatever, it's okay to go out and tap somebody on the shoulder and say, hey, can you sit on this panel for us? All these types of things, you know, and you know, I did that when we were in Queensland 1 year. We brought in Brian Curl just as a outsider. Hey, can you just come and, you know, give your opinions through this interview process? I think that's super important, because a lot of people get sold the story of, hey, I've got this guy, this guy, this guy, you know, we can do this. And then they ultimately get the job and half of the team that they said doesn't end up coming because the budget changes or whatever. So that's a lot of the reason why they get recycled. And I think it's because boards maybe don't have the right people on the panels. Yep. You know, I think is important. But the biggest thing at the moment is with so many leagues, quite often you just take who you can get that's got some experience. You know, it's difficult. I've had, you know, an NBL 1 coach call me maybe 3 times about, oh, I need a good assistant. And I'm like, yeah. We all do.
Yeah.
You know, everyone else. Yeah. Because it was so many leagues, they're all coaching.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, they're all coaching. So the best thing for you to do is go through that. I think you're better off to spend some time as an assistant instead of being a head coach of a D2 men, for example, or a D1 men. You're better off trying to be an assistant at state champ or NBL 1. And I think that's how you would get into it. but you've got to have connection to the junior space, because when those players become of age, you can then be that guy going into the meeting, or girl going into that meeting, saying, I have coached this person. I've got a relationship with this person. It helps.
Yeah. Yeah, it really does. I mean, just again, just drawing on my experiences, was having players basically give me a voice in the room. So, I can't remember if I've told this story or not on the pod before, but how I ended up an assistant coach with the Bendigo Spirit was, I was working out Joy Burke, who obviously had come to Ballarat as part of our senior women's program. She had her connections from Bendigo. She'd obviously just had a season there in the WNBL. And in a conversation, you know, with Kelsey Griffin, like, Kelsey, oh man, like, I really need a workout, you know, like, season's coming up. And Joy's like, well, this guy over here at Ballarat, like, he's okay. You know, you should come and connect with him.
Okay.
Yeah.
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 Aim for the middle ground.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I'm trying to keep my arrogance in check today. But she's like, come, this guy's pretty good. You know, you should come have a workout. And she was like, oh, do you reckon he would? And we connected. She came over. You know, we had a workout. And I think in the span of like 2 weeks, Simon Pritchard's calling me. He's like, hey, you know, you want to come on staff, hearing really good things. And, you know, all of a sudden, you're moving through the pathway. And just to bring it back to that senior space, you know, especially if you are an assistant coach or a youth league coach and you are trying to move up into that, you know, NBL one head coaching spot, you know, proving to athletes, veteran athletes, NBL athletes, you know, the people that are going to help with decisions in the room, that ones that are talking to board members and GMs and directors of coaching, you know, for them to go in the room and say, hey man, you got to look out for this guy, like, he's pretty good, you know, he could be a head coach one day, that's really going to help you elevate.
Yeah, it never hurts to have players on side, let's face it. And not that we necessarily want to become players coaches where we just pander to them, but having some validation, I think, coming back from them and having those conversations where it's push and pull, you get to find out a little bit more. And I suppose for young coaches in particular, the senior space can be a really intimidating one because they're potentially coaching players that are older than them, more experienced than them. Like, it's, I mean, you mentioned Kelsey Griffin, like, it's one heck of a playing career to this point. So that in itself can be really intimidating. It's like, geez, I don't know that I want to go and correct her on something because she might actually be right. But until you put yourself in that position, how do you know?
Yeah,
like, it's really difficult for the young coaches. So how would you suggest young coaches kind of, I suppose, get over it's the right way, but how do they put themselves in that position where they can be wrong?
I mean, it starts with competence. You know, we talk about competence, you know, equaling confidence. So, you know, you do want to be in a headspace that you can go into that environment and feel comfortable just, you know, talking openly, you know, about, you know, what you're seeing and whether that's a correction or not. Also the connection space, you know, and we hear coaches talk about this at all levels, you know, MBA all the way down, you know, we want to connect before we correct. So, you know, are these younger coaches making an effort to get to know this person and, you know, maybe doing a little bit of background research around, well, where are they in their career and what are some things they're trying to work on, you know, maybe, you know, in between NBL or WNBL seasons, and can they go do some research? So can they go do some background work that says, okay, well, when we do get a chance to work out, I'm going to feel really confident, I've done my work, and maybe we could have a really good session where I help them out. You're going to get it wrong. Like, nobody's perfect. You know, we get it wrong all the time. It's those moments of, you know, vulnerability to say, you know, oh yeah, maybe that's not right. Or, you know, you give the athlete something, they didn't like it, and it's like, okay, cool. All right. Yep. Let's try something else. You know, is there something you're feeling that maybe we could try here? They're not sure. Okay, cool. I'll go away and I'll research it. We'll come back to it. Let's move on to something else. And so, you know, it's tough. Like, you know, the first time that happens, yeah, you're going to walk away. You're not going to feel great about yourself. But without those moments, you can't grow. Without those moments, you know, you can't get better and find other ways to move forward in your coaching. So it's a little bit of leap of faith.
Yep.
But definitely, you know, the more work you're doing behind the scenes, you know, the less those moments are going
to
happen.
There's a bit of humility involved with that too. As to every now and again, you give the feedback, you realize you're wrong. You've got to put your hand up and say, yeah, okay, I'm not right on this one. And you got to give credit where credit is due to the player. And it's like, hey, look, actually, that's not me, that's them. Like, it's because that is endearing to players. And you don't want to be that coach that just says, yeah, I was wrong, yeah, I was wrong, yeah, I was wrong. Because eventually the player's going to go, are you right about anything? Like, it's, you have to find the balancing act between the two. But I think by having those conversations with the player in particular, you can get a little bit more credibility, I suppose, in that space where now they feel comfortable coming to you because you're not just going to give them what they want to hear. You're going to give your opinion where you might be right, you might be wrong. There is going to be a bit of pushback, but you actually get a better answer out of the end of it. Like, have you had any experience with that, Bestie? Like, you came from a player into a coaching space.
Yeah, well, I actually had this exact scenario and similar to what Coop said with Lauren Nicholson. So while I was in working for BTAS, they went through a change of coaches, and the Tornadoes, they asked if I could step in and run some of their individuals with some of their players. And that was fine. It was all good. I then moved to Casey. Lauren Nicholson signed to play with Kilsyth in, I think it was the first year of NBL 1 when they won. It was Sam Wisnam.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. And she was like, oh, hey, are you available for some workouts? I'm like, yeah, sure. So she would drive from Kilsyth to Casey, and we did our first workout, and we sit down to do the review while we're doing the cool down together. And I said, you know, what'd you like? What didn't you like? And she said, well, you know, I liked XYZ. I feel like I'm proficient in this already, so maybe we shouldn't spend as much time in this. And then the next workout, I was really better prepared for it, and it was really good. And then very quickly, there was another player from Kilsyth, and then there was some of her teammates from Adelaide Lightning at the time came to a workout, and it was just like, yeah, it's good. We can get a workout in. However, it was confusing to me that the YMCA would still want to charge those girls a casual shooting fee of of $5.40. Yeah. And I'm like, well, you've got some players on the Australian national team yeah. here. You know,
I think Dirk got charged for a workout when he was out here once. And I think Deli did too. Like, got charged casual shooting rates walking in to just get shots up in the off-season. Yeah. Like, it's incredible how often that happens.
But literally that exact same scenario is what happened. It was like, yeah, workout was okay. Word travels fast, yeah. But it was literally at the end of each workout, I had planned time in it. It's like, okay, so we're going to hit the floor for an hour, but you need to give me another 15 minutes after that so we can debrief the session. What did you like? What didn't you like? Where do you feel you're at with this? This is what I saw in your game on the weekend. You know, all of that. So it's important.
I think it's a great space for young coaches to get involved in too. Like, get that connection with the players, start getting feedback, but also giving feedback to them in an individual space before you have the confidence to jump into a team environment where you're happy to talk up in a change room and say, hey, we were supposed to three-way switch that and we didn't, and that's on you. Like, you have to have that connection first where you have that ability to go and do it. It's not easy.
And just for everyone listening out there, you don't charge those athletes.
No,
that's right. Yeah, it's a great point.
They're getting you better. Yeah. Like, that's the big thing is they are getting you better as a coach.
Correct.
To come in and do that work. Like, you don't, I don't say this disrespectfully, but you're probably not going to get any better as a coach working an under-12 athlete.
Oh, look.
Whereas the pros, you get better.
Yeah, look, I went to the YMCA and said, I'll pay the casual shooting fee.
Yep.
I was embarrassed for them as a you know, I was like, I'll pay it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's incredible how often it happens.
Yeah, because I think just importantly on the back of that is, you know, one of the gifts, you know, that to our coaches, yeah, you know, our young coaches listening, you know, especially our young, hungry coaches, pathway coaches, the gift you have is time. And, you know, as you get older and get married and have kids and all, you know, jobs and all those, you know, real world things that come about, the time goes pretty quickly. So the fact that you have it now, you've got to use it. And obviously we don't want to push, and there's a big thing on well-being, and we understand that. You know, we're not asking anyone to do anything that, you know, that, you know, causes any health issues. But that's the key, is you've got the time, you've got to use it.
Don't disagree with that at all. So, I mean, I actually had it listed for later, but you kind of hit it on a bestie. How do you go about giving and receiving feedback with the seniors in particular? Like, I know any time I've been involved with senior teams, we've sort of done a midway review of the year and we've asked them some questions. Look, what are you liking? What aren't you liking? What do you need? But also giving them the opportunity to say, well, look, what do we need to change? Like, how can we make this a better situation for you? Is there anything that we're doing that causes you discomfort? Those types of things. Is that as simple as a sit-down one-on-one meeting, Bestie, or do you have everyone in the room at the same time? Like, how have you found that to work best in your space?
Well, I probably don't have enough experience to talk about that, to be honest, because the bulk of my senior experience is as a player.
Yep.
And when I have coached senior teams, it was through, like, the Tassie State League. It was just tournament-based.
Yeah,
so we would sort of do that after each round of tournaments. So we because there wasn't a game coming up. You know, we just had more practice. It was like, it was almost like a little mini season review at the end. And right, this is what we're going to focus on for the next 3 or 4 weeks practice before the next round would be. So I probably don't want to talk out of school really that. But what I would say, as with my playing hat on, is I would want that regularly.
Yep.
Definitely around my role and where we're going as a team and what's working, what isn't working. And particularly as I got more senior in my experience, when you have the ear of a lot of your teammates as well, I think I would want that more regularly. But it's probably more a question for Coops, I would say, yeah.
Yeah, starts in recruiting. So obviously you get some film, you get some background information, and you know, you get to feel out, okay, what is this player? You know, how are they going to fit with us? But then also, you know, you're doing your research within that is, okay, what are their strengths? What are their weaknesses? You know, what are some things that you're looking at? And let's say it's an NBL player, right? Maybe 10 to a DP. You know, they're really strong in A, B, and C, but maybe they need to work on, you know, E and F or whatever it may be to help push them, you know, up the depth chart in their NBL team. So starting there is a really good spot because then that also helps in your recruiting conversation. You know, I know a little bit about you. I'm seeing these are some strengths. You know, maybe we can work on this. Oh, yeah, you know, that's something I've been thinking about. So we're starting a dialogue. Then let's say we recruit that athlete, you know, contract gets signed, they come in. We do our motivational interviewing. So we sit down and we talk to them about, you know, who are you? What are you in this for? You know, what are some of your triggers? You know, what are some things, you know, do you like being coached this way, that way? So again, we're building information. We're having conversations. We're trying to get as much input from them about this process as possible. Then we establish the player role, which, you know, not only has the strengths and weaknesses, but we'll talk about shot quality. You know, what do we think, you know, is a good shot for them and how it relates to our system. And then there's an obvious follow-up with that as we go. You know, usually we'll try and make that scheduled. If there are potentially some performance issues, you know, around maybe they hit a slump or something like that, we can obviously come back again and have a discussion. But then the other one for me, which was really important, was connecting with their NBL club. And I try and do that at least twice. So maybe somewhere around the start of the season and then somewhere again towards the end. You know, hey, whoever, you know, we've signed so-and-so, you know, this is what we're thinking. This is kind of a little bit of a plan of how we're going to do it. What's your thoughts? And I've had some NBL coaches be like, great, love it. You know, you go with that. We're good. And then other ones said, okay, no, we need this or we need a little bit more of that. And it's just an ongoing process and it's trying to be as transparent as possible. It's kind of like what Bessie's saying, you know, it's ongoing. And we just work in that thing together. And the more input that the athlete has, the better they feel about it. The more input they have, the better they feel within the program, that they have a voice, that they're being heard. And you'll find that that tends to translate beyond just those discussions around their development, that they'll start finding their voice more within the team and within the club. And obviously, when you have everybody feel like they have a voice and can connect and have meaningful conversations and evaluate, then you know, you're really onto something there. And, yeah, so that was a little bit of plan how we used to do it.
Linking with the NBL club is important. I remember we were, when I was with Sunshine Coast Phoenix and lucky enough to do some video stuff for the Brisbane Bullets, we obviously wanted to sign Tom Fullerton to our QBL team because he was one of our juniors. But I actually had a conversation with Andre at the time around Matt Kenyon and said, you know, like, I think we want to sign them both. They're young. You know, they'll be close to you guys, so they'll be able to still come back and work out. And he was like, yeah, that's great, you know. And that actually assisted in the signing of him, you know. So it's super important.
Yeah. No, I like the ongoing thing. Like, I know you've seen the teams I've been involved in the past. We've usually sort of scheduled that mid-season break is like we're doing reviews. We're going to see how it goes. And you get the same stuff. Oh, you know, I think you could hold us more accountable with some things. And it's like, yeah, no worries. And then 2 weeks after, look, you're probably holding us a bit too accountable with this sort of stuff. Like, you're never going to find the perfect spot. But as long as you're having that ongoing conversation, you're in an okay spot.
So how do you go with the review from the association at that point? Because this is a difficult one. And, I even said this to my GM at Casey, because as the development manager, loosely was affiliated with the senior teams, you know, we would have a technical meeting, I guess, as such at the start of the year and say, look, this is what we're doing with the juniors. Let's try and agree on some things that would be consistent. You know, it's difficult. But then when it's you come in to do this review and it's like, well, I haven't been at all their practices. I've only gone to a few home games. It's not actually really fair for me to say, you know, so what are we actually grading on here? Are we grading on just wins and losses? Because really that's all you can say unless you're truly in the trenches.
Yeah.
Are you at practice? Are you at every game? Are you sitting behind the bench?
Yeah.
You know, those types of things.
And who is? Well, it's, I mean, there aren't too many junior directors of coaching or basketball development managers that are involved in that space.
Yeah, and that's we spoke about it briefly, on, obviously, on the last pod. And so Ballarat, for me, that was the combination. So my first year there, my CEO said, hey, look, we don't want you involved in the senior stuff. We're starting our program from scratch. We've had no one in the role for, I think, about 3 years. We just need you in the junior. Said, yep, that's fine.
Are a lot of associations that do that too.
Yeah. Oh,
that are really conscious. They want a clear divide between the two. Oh, because yes. There are a lot of coaches, and it's not through any malicious, you know, intent or anything like that, that as soon as the senior season starts, they focus all their time on the senior season because that's the wins and loss, and they forget about the junior. So I get why associations
do that. Yeah, no, and that was fine, and I totally understood that. And then I just said to the CEO that I respected that and I was happy to do it, but in my second year and going on, that I'd like the opportunity to be involved if that was possible. And so credit to everyone involved. We did a really good job of getting the juniors off the ground, and so then I was able to get involved in the seniors. And the best part about it was I really felt entrenched in the entire program. Mm. And the way that we connected, I think I've mentioned this before, but our Wednesday morning session, so our senior elite teams program was under 18s, youth league, and Siebel at the time. So they would all practice together. We had, you know, exchange of ideas. You know, we were sharing systems.
Yeah, bodies on the court.
Bodies on the floor. The players really felt connected. You know, we would move guys up and down. Sometimes an 18 was doing really well. We're like, yep, come train with the Siebel team this week. You know, not necessarily all the time, but, you know, they would get that opportunity. And all of a sudden it's like, whoa, actually, there is a clear path here. And then an important one for us was Wednesday morning. So obviously we had more of a traditional, you know, Tuesday, Thursday night. But Wednesday morning, we actually practiced on two courts, and it was our better under 16 kids, our 18s, our youth, and our Siebel all on floor together. Like, and so sometimes we had under 16s on the floor with our Siebel guys. The Siebel guys were really good. They understood, you know, when it was like a 16 bigger body, I can go at this kid, he's going to get something out of it. And then sometimes it's like, no, I mean, like,
yeah, you I look don't at need the to back size, this kid down from the 3-point line to get a 2-point. Yeah.
No, but I could still help him. Maybe you're on the same team and all of a sudden the peer-to-peer coaching from this senior athlete to, you know, this exciting under 16. And, like, we had music going, you know, the guys came in, the banter, the handshakes, like all those little things, you know, between like an under 16 and a Siebel athlete. Just brought our program together, and it was a pretty special time. I really enjoyed it, and if you can, I do highly recommend that sort of integration of junior to senior, because, you know, we had some really successful years in doing that, and I definitely enjoyed it.
I mean, and you guys, like, I remember that season, you guys won and lost. Like, you're in a pretty good spot in that space, but you're not talking about the wins at this point.
No.
Like, what you're talking about is the environment that was created in that space. There were players that clearly had aspirations to move up higher, but the peer-to-peer coaching is just so valuable. Like, how many times have we seen a vet come into a team that is just like another coach's voice, but it's not quite as confronting for them?
Yeah.
Like, they don't feel like they're getting not yelled at by a coach or getting feedback by a coach. They're getting feedback from another player, which makes them feel so much better about it all.
Yeah, I mean, it was really special. And you saw some of these younger guys and girls, you know, really just have these, you know, incredible moments being coached up by people that they were watching on the weekend. We found that the guys and girls were coming to more Friday nights at the Mitre Dome to watch these guys play if they had a home game.
Mm.
So, yeah, I mean, it was really cool. And, yeah, look, we went to the conference final both those years, and that's definitely not the things that I remember. You know, I remember being around these athletes. I remember being in those environments and us all just really enjoying, you know, growing as basketball players, growing a community program. Yeah, it was a really special time.
Yep, that makes a lot of sense. So, Bestie, you've just gone through team selection with your youth league team at the moment. How did you do that? Was it an open run? Was it a trial as such? Like, was there anything that was different to what it would be at a junior level in that space?
Very different. And I'll put it out there early because I've been confronted on it by multiple people. Yes, I did cut someone 20 minutes into the session. And then, yes, I did go another round of cuts 45 minutes into the session. It's true. I did do it. And here's why, right? So the first thing is for youth league, it was a anyone can register scenario. And I know Coops talks about it a lot, self-awareness. You know, we had some cats turn up that, you know, one kid just sat on the sidelines for the first 20 minutes scared, you know, and I felt for him. You know, there was people went and checked in and said, you know, are you going to jump on? Do you want to try? You know, that type of stuff. And I'm not a monster. He's not the one that I cut 20 minutes in. He got cut in the second round of the 45 minutes, right?
Oh, what a guy.
Right? No, because the reality is we had 48 or something turn up for youth league. And when I spoke to Casey about the job, there was legitimate KPIs around number of KC athletes in it. And I'm pleased to say that in the group, one kid is not a KC junior.
Yep.
You know, so like that's something that the club's super proud of. And that's because we've graduated a couple to the NBL One program. But the anyone can register, open trial, you know, I said to the whole group at the start, look, we're hitting the ground running. We want to move pretty quickly. I had coached almost all of them through either under 16s or 18s and my time as a development manager there. So I was like, we're going to cut you fairly quickly. And I said to them, it's because I want you to go and play somewhere else. You know, it's like, and I know there wasn't another trial on that night, but we wanted to get down to a certain level. So even at a youth league level, much the same as you do at a senior level is, like, we had a depth chart going in.
Yeah.
You know, I knew this kid. Yeah, as soon as I got the role, I called every player that was in the team last year and said, you know, where are you at? What are you doing? I know you. You know me. Are you planning on coming back? You know, and some of them, I was just honest with them. This is senior basketball. We want you back. Yep. You know, like, it's, yes, you've got to come and try. You've got to do all the right things and nothing's guaranteed. But, you know, you turn up and do the right things, like, you're in. And that's just how it goes, right? And when you get to a senior level as a player, those conversations were had like before an open run or anything. We want to sign you. Most of the time, this is the money. You know, this is what's maybe involved with the juniors. Are you up for that? So yeah, we cut quick. For those that were interesting, we kept them around for a few sessions. But this goes back to what I said earlier. That we kept around, I knew them anyway. You know, I either knew them through my role here or just being around basketball in Melbourne for, you know, the last 4 or 5 years since I came back. So we knew who they were, and some of them that were clearly trialing at our club and another club, you know, I would call that coach and be like, hey man, is this kid turn up at your session as well? Like, yep, where do you see him? Well, that, you know, where do they live in the youth league space? What's best for them? You know, where are they going to turn up? Like, we had some kids that were playing quite a fair bit away. And like, one of the athletes that we did sign that was not a junior was traveling well past Casey, but lived in Pakenham. And I'm like, yeah, come with us. Like, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So I think that's how we did it. But yes, I did. Yeah, it was about 25 minutes in.
Yeah.
See you later.
What a guy you are. But in all honesty, though, it is the right thing to do to let athletes trial at other clubs. And I mean, we do that with junior kids too. Like, if we know we're not going to pick them in juniors, let them go somewhere else so they can try and get a game at a level that's appropriate. So, I mean, for full transparency, you're a youth league champ. They might be able to go to a youth league one or a youth league two club okay, if they're not up for it for the level you're at, they can go somewhere else.
Definitely.
It does give them some options. And there are senior programs out there that don't have that steady stream of juniors coming through, I suppose, where they are looking for players from other clubs and associations to jump into that space. So I don't think it's a bad thing. How big is your squad for youth league?
We've got 14.
Yep.
That's because there's two that will mostly be with the NBL one group. Yep. However, the under 20 program practices with us on a Thursday, either with us or on the court next to us. So we've named some development type players, if that makes sense, and they'll cross over. But yeah, just I think that's the biggest thing. Talking to some of the players that were potentially good enough to make our group, I said to them openly, listen, guys, I've got, you know, we want to have a mostly Casey core here. And if we are going to bring someone in, it's positional based. It's not necessarily the best player as such, you know. Yep. So, and I said, this is what I'm telling you. You better go get to some other runs. Go and do it. And for the most part, they were obviously a little disappointed. But for the most part, they were appreciative of it once I explained it to them. Because yep. they're men now.
Yeah.
Yep. No, that makes a lot of sense. So, you're already in preseason?
Yeah, we've actually got a scrimmage tonight. The interesting thing was we picked our group, and I was planning on just having a bit of off time, but they just wanted to keep going. They're like, you know, can we just keep rolling? I'm like, yeah, sure. You know, so we've just been going.
Yep. So how long, I mean, and you've both been involved in a number of different levels, when is the sweet spot for preseason? Like, when is it like, hey, this is just too much, we're too early here, we're going to peak like round three, and then it's going to be downhill from there? Like, is there a sweet spot that you found, like, in your space?
Well, I think it has a lot to do with the group, and obviously we just heard about that in terms of, you know, what Bessie's talking about, where these guys have got together and they're really excited about, you know, they have the energy, they have the motivation, they want to be together, they want to be on floor. So I think you can, you know, straight away get the kind of get the vibe from the athletes on when it's too soon. If it's, you know, if you feel like you need a little bit of time off, great. It's pretty hard to nail down an exact date. But if you're looking at a group that maybe is a little bit older, I mean, obviously, you know, injury level, load, family, work, you know, can we build this thing up from a 1 day a week into two, maybe three? You know, is it a strength and conditioning session rather than being on floor? You know, can we start with maybe just some conditioning? They can do strength work at home. You know, there's obviously a way here that you can be adaptable. You can be creative to really work out what's going to be best for your athletes. You know, can you start filtering in some system through film? You know, you start your WhatsApp group. Hey, guys, you know, here's a clip of last year's team running our two-side fast break really well. You know, this is obviously something we may bring in, you know, or we'll look to bring in as we build it up. So, yeah, I think there's just a variety of things that you can do there. And then depending on your group is kind of when you'll start it.
How much conditioning work would you do pre-season?
Like, well,
feel like we've hit on a bestie area here. Given how his eyes lit up there.
No, it's an interesting one. But what I will say is this is why we're having sort of an unofficial scrimmage tonight, because we have been going for a while.
Yep.
And I could sense it probably the week before last, like, we either need to have a break or we need some outside competition. So we've actually got tonight and Thursday, we're having unofficial scrimmages with two other programs. One's a senior men's program, one's another youth champ team, just to break it up because you can sort of see it a little bit.
Yep.
You know,
starting
so
to get a little bit chippy at training
sessions. It's good, right? So I am yet to make my team run.
Yep.
We just play the whole time. And I think as coaches, we are quick to make people run as punishment. Mm-hmm. And that's the era I grew up through. And definitely with college, like I saw players having to complete a 10 in a minute for their jersey, you know, before a game sometimes, you know, just wild stuff. And what it's done for me is I actually hate running. Like, I won't go for a run now. I ride a stationary bike instead. So I choose... Often you'll see it, star jumps, burpees, some sort of how can I work in some sort of strength conditioning, something that maybe they're not doing with the juniors. Often we put them on the sideline to talk to address them, and then maybe it's like close out the halfway, come back, and then refocus. So, and obviously we're working with a different level of athletes. But I told our youth league group from the beginning, we give them a basic action, work on it in the half court, and then we're up and down. And they're like, I'm like, you guys would rather get in shape this way. They're like, yep, we all agree. And they're cooked. Like by the end of each session, they're like, they're done. Yep. And it's much more enjoyable for everyone.
And we've all heard the stories of senior coaches just rolling out the beep test first session back after Christmas. And it's like, this is not going to go well for anyone. Like if you want to to really tap into some childhood trauma. Like you hear those beeps and the beep test, and there's like the shudder comes over everyone, I feel like, in that space.
But not only that, they'll be straight into the GM's office to complain.
Yeah. you want to get fired. Very easy way of going.
Players want to play. How are you budgeting your time?
Yeah.
You know, it's the same as, you know, 30, 40 minutes of cone work in a senior practice. Like, get out of here. Like, no player wants to do that.
No, that's right. And there's a lot of data right now that shows, you know, the benefits of just playing basketball is the best way to get basketball fit. And we know, like our friend, you know, Darren McInnes at Core, like he talks about that all the time. So it doesn't mean that you can't go and do some S&C stuff.
Oh, of course.
Like obviously the benefits for that really more are, can you break up maybe, you know, a month of just being on floor and, you know, you're defending the same actions because that's the stuff you're running, you know. Or can you use it in more of a team building environment? You know, can we, you know, add some strength? You know, I always like a good beach session. You know, something fun, go down, mimic the Navy SEALs. But, you know, can we all carry a log above our head, or, you know, we're doing push-ups in the water? But that really is just about that moment to, you know, in 6 weeks' time to go back and reminisce and be like, hey, remember that session on the beach where we worked hard?
It's not getting them fitter.
No.
It's just building some core memories around.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, 100%.
Hey, remember when Coos was a jerk and he made us go for a 100-meter sprint in the water? Yeah, I do. Yeah, Coop sucks. It's that kind of thing.
It is.
But that does build that camaraderie. It's like that. That shared experience will build that out in that space. So you do have to be a little bit careful around the preseason side of things that you're not going, as you say, full Navy SEAL and making them run through the woods before they get to practice, and that's not going to be helpful for anyone.
Yeah. So I'll say where we're at now, I'm at the point where there might be one or two individual conversations about, hey, now you need a little extra conditioning on the side as opposed to making the whole group run.
Yeah,
if that makes sense, because we are playing so much, there's maybe one or two that maybe need a little bit extra. So then that conversation is had, and I'm finding it to go well. It worked well with me as a player, you know, coming into a season in shape or not. Particularly if a lot of players too in the NBL one space, and whether they're playing in NBL or maybe an overseas European league, sometimes I would come back from playing overseas, and we'd be. Sometimes the season had started already, or sometimes it was the tail end of preseason here, depending on how successful the season over there was. It's like, hang on a minute. I've just come off the back of a season. I don't need to, you know, start running.
I am fit.
I'm pretty good. Yeah. Like, I just need a little bit of rest. You know, my cardio, you know, endurance is going to drop. You know, so it's knowing those conversations, I guess, is important.
So, I've just looked at the time again. Once again, I think we're going to wrap up this podcast without actually talking about any of the tactical stuff. So strap in for a round three of senior coaching, which is inevitably coming. But how do you manage, because you're both at an age now where you're slightly removed from playing. I'm not going to retire either of you prematurely. I'm sure you both could still give meaningful minutes if you had to. But you're also at the age where you're probably still able to be friends with the people that you have in your team and your coaching. How do you navigate that so that you're not overly friendly with them? Like, you're not literally coaching your friends, but you can still hold them accountable when you need to hold them accountable. Like, I know, Coops, you do a lot of stuff off court with people you used to coach, and you still have those connections. How did you manage that?
Yeah, look, I found that the honest and forthright communication and relationship actually allowed for the accountability that almost the closer we were, the more I could kind of push them. You know, I did take a little bit of lead from, you know, Greg Popovich when, you know, he would potentially prompt an athlete. So I had gone into a session before and said to, you know, one of our leaders and just said, hey, man, like, our energy, like, the last couple of weeks have been pretty poor. I'm on you today. Just so you know, like, this is me, you know, kind of showing the group that, you know,
everyone's
accountable, you know. So we've done that in the past, but, you know, that ability after the game to talk, like, I've had some conversations with guys after games, and, you know, maybe, you know, we're up in the club rooms or we're out afterwards, you know, enjoying a creamy soda, and they've come to me and said, hey, man, I didn't appreciate, you know, in the third quarter when you got on me about, you know, but it was really so-and-so. And then for me, it's like, yeah, look, I'm really sorry. Like, I thought it was him. You know, I needed to get on someone at that moment. You know, I appreciate you taking it. And then if I felt necessary, we would potentially take that into the next practice. And I would stand up in front of the group and say, hey, look, just so you know, like I got on Rob on Saturday night because he didn't do something we spoke about. Actually, it was someone else. I just want to apologize to him just so he knows. And, you know, and just having those sorts of conversations. But I really enjoyed creating some lifelong friends through senior basketball. And I guess just being pretty lucky that the stronger we made the friendship, the easier the coaching became.
Yeah, absolutely. What about you, Bestie? Like, you've had it from both ends, I'm sure.
Yeah, it doesn't apply for the current group that I'm with because it's youth league.
Quite removed.
Yeah, and I've coached them in under-18s, you know.
You're not interested in being in their TikToks or their beer reels or anything like that?
No, no. And we'll put it to bed. Like, I am done. I'm not playing.
That's the official announcement.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
And I can't imagine anyone would be too disappointed in that. But yeah, that doesn't apply for me, but it would be more from a playing perspective. And, you know, I had a very young coach when I came back to youth league with Tigers, with Nick Avasevich at the time. So there was no youth league. So I went and started playing ABA, VBL, whatever it was. Youth league started, Tigers had their first program. So I came back. And I was at the older end of it. You know, I was in my 20s already. And I know that's what youth league's meant to be for. Yeah. But, you know, at that time. So, and Nick was younger. But he was so switched on that it was no problem. And almost similar when I went to college. I had a young coach. I went to college a little bit older. And I had a coach that was actually similar age as me. And I thought it was going to be an issue. But they knew their stuff and we had some conversations offline and I said, and it was really around, there's no way that I can, for the betterment of the group, be disrespectful in any way, because otherwise this has a poor outcome for everybody. So the bottom line is what Coop said earlier, competency. If you're competent, you'll have no problem with it. If you're not, you get found out.
Yeah, and that's not easy. Like that's difficult. I mean, we see junior coaches struggle with it now. Like we have some of our younger coaches coaching, say, first teams and VC teams and the like, and that line you feel like gets blurred a little bit at times as to, geez, you're holding them accountable, you're just mates with the players, and it doesn't hurt to be friendly with them, but you do have to have a line there somewhere. Like, you're not going to hang out with those guys after a game. They've got their friends, you've got your friends. Like, try and keep that a little bit separate if you can.
Yeah, I mean, that you can establish some some guidelines early on in your season. Around that, like, you can nip that in the bud pretty quick, and that's not walking in the room and, you know, and banging and crashing and saying I'm the boss, you know, everybody follows. You know, it's having those conversations to the team around, hey guys, like, I'm here for you, like, I'm, you know, I'd like, speaking personally, I'd like to think I'm an athlete, you know, centered coach, like, I'm here for you guys, my number one goal is to see you guys have success, I'm going to enjoy developing relationships with you. But at the end of the day, like, I'm going to have to make some tough decisions. There are going to be moments where I'm going to do things that you're not going to appreciate. Let's just make sure we keep the communication open and we go about this thing the right way.
Mm. And it's one thing to be mindful of, and I think you mentioned it before, Coops, like the WhatsApp group or whatever the case may be. No problems being in that WhatsApp group and communicating that way, or Facebook groups or whatever the case may be. If you think there is not another group going on that does not have you in it, you are kidding yourself as a coach.
Yeah.
And to be fair, I think it's healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, let them have it.
Like, they should be encouraging it.
Yeah, yeah. Like, if they need to sit there and say, hey, yeah, Coops was a jerk tonight, and then they go, yeah, he was. It's like, all right, cool. Like, get it out now. Like, they have to have that time and that separation from you where they're not sort of treading on eggshells and, oh, are they going to hear it? Are they around? Let them have it. Like, as long as it doesn't get out of control, obviously. But, you know, you would hope that you have enough good leaders within your group that they know where the line is to say, hey, pull up. Like, you've gone too far on that one. But let them have that. Like, I mean, we hear about players-only meetings all the time, and it's like, oh, yeah, they've lost a couple on the trot. Players-only meeting is coming. But sometimes they can actually be really refreshing. Like, as much as it's cliched, they can actually be a really good thing for your group because you want your players to have a voice and hold each other accountable in that space. So, yeah, don't panic if you feel like you're missing out because they're in a different group or something like that. It's actually a good thing.
Yeah, they definitely have it, because there's times where maybe someone's running late or something like that, and I'll say to the group, can you just, in your other chat, just message them? Because you know what's happening.
Absolutely. Like, I found it out this year with under 18 girls. Like, we had an iMessage. Well, I asked them at the start, do you want WhatsApp? Do you want iMessage? Do you want Facebook? And they're like, not Facebook. I'm like, all right, cool. iMessage, no worries. like their group chat was on Snapchat.
Yeah.
And it's like,
yeah.
Well, yeah, that's not a space I'm dabbling in.
Yeah.
Like it's...
Wise move.
Yeah, yeah, not my world.
Well, I actually, going on to, we're getting off topic here, but on the Snapchat thing, an athlete was running late and I'm like, oh, I haven't heard of him or whatever. And one of the kids said, oh, I can see where they are. Like on the, they're on their way, you know, like through the pin or whatever it is. I'm like, all right, well, I guess I'll be here in 5 minutes then.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, we've had it where it's like, oh, they've gone to the other stadium. I'm like, how do you know that? They message you. I'm like, no, I can see it.
Yeah.
It's like, you've got to be kidding me. Yeah. Like, if you think Big Brother isn't watching, you are very, very wrong.
Yeah.
And shout out to Big Brother. If they're no doubt listening to the podcast, I hope you have liked, shared, and subscribed to the pod. Thank you both for jumping in. I do realise the time, and we've gone over. Strap in for part three of the Senior Coaching Podcast, where I promise we will talk about things like scout tactics, how big should the playbook be, all that sort of stuff. I can't guarantee when that's going to happen, but I'm sure it will happen at some stage. There will be a part three. Thank you both for jumping in today. It is greatly appreciated. Coaches, good luck with your coaching, and we will catch you guys on the next pod. Look, tune in, enjoy the tribe.